This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Shao Eek. Men's health is largely under-recognized in mainstream healthcare. Yet we are finally starting to catch up to the idea that the male population has specific health challenges that urgently need a public health approach for prevention and management. However, before we can implement strategies to promote men's health, we need national policies and data that is representative of men from different walks of life in Malaysia. In light of this, we speak to Dr. Zakia binti Muhammad Said, public health physician from the adult health sector in the Ministry of Health's Family Health Development Division for the National Perspective of Men's Health, and Professor Alan White, Emeritus Professor of Men's Health from Leeds Beckett University, who will share how men's health is finally being approached within the global agenda. Good afternoon, Dr. Zakia and Professor Alan. How are you today?
Yes, very well. Thank you.
Good, thank you.
When it comes to men's health, what we know for certain is that men generally have shorter life expectancies. Dr. Zakia, what are the main causes of death among men in Malaysia?
Well, Xiao, thank you very much for this kind invitation. So, and we know that, based on your question, Malaysia is a rapidly progressing country with an estimated population of 16.7 million males in 2017. And since our Independence Day, there have been marked improvement in sanitation, delivery of clean water, vaccination, antibiotics, and control of lifestyle diseases. And the life expectancy of Malaysian men has increased by about 30 years, with 20 years gained over the last 30 years, and men's is always behind women's in their life expectancy. The latest was 72.5 in men and 77.2 in women. Premature mortality are the main concern. Premature death among men between the age of 15 to 65 years old is twice as high as women. And among the major contributors to premature death are chronic cardiovascular related illnesses such as heart disease and stroke, road traffic accidents, diseases related to lungs such as bronchitis, pneumonia and asthma, and cancers whereby colorectal cancer is the main cancer that affects men and is followed by lung and prostate cancer. So basically that is, I can say that the introduction of the statistic of men's as a whole.
Professor Allen, does that reflect the global picture as well?
Yes, we see very high levels of men dying prematurely and preventably. That's the main thing. Most of these deaths that we see in men are preventable. High levels of death from cardiovascular disease, from preventable cancer, from road traffic accident, workplace accidents. That's the side that we can recognise throughout the world. Wherever you are, you can see that.
In the developing world as well as the developed world?
Yes, very much so. We're seeing improvements, and we're seeing improvements in through statins and through better health screening and picking people up and treating them earlier. But we still see high numbers of men smoking and problems with alcohol and men overweight. And all of these contribute greatly to their risk of dying prematurely.
You mentioned smoking and those behaviours. So are those among the risk factors that disproportionately lead men to premature death?
There's a whole raft of issues. There's men's risk-taking generally, I mean, in terms of road traffic accidents or violence. But in terms of how men are brought up and culture, their culture to see themselves as being invincible, and they feel as though, well, we don't need to worry about our health because our health is fine. And so therefore you're seeing them developing problems because of this feeling that they don't need to be too anxious about it. Whereas we're saying now, actually, you do need to be anxious to it because you need to have a good life. Another interesting thing is because men are tending to live longer, they're now going into older years and living longer into their older years. And we want them to be as healthy as they can be to go into those older years so they can enjoy their retirement.
Instead of being a burden on our healthcare system.
Yes. I mean, those men, we see so many men dying young, and that leaves a terrible burden on their family and on their friends and their wives, their children have lost their father, their spouse, their partner. The workforce has lost a key member. But also the men themselves have to feel as though their life is worth it. This is my life. I've got to protect my life. I want to be live long and happy. And I can't live long and happy if I'm ill. And so by making some changes to our lifestyle, the way we live our lives, then perhaps we're able to live a more happy and fruitful life.
Dr. Zakia, while Malaysia is culturally diverse, do we see those similar kinds of attitudes of what it means to be a male, those masculine kind of attitudes?
Well, I think that, yeah. We know that Malaysian is actually multicultural, multi-religious and multi-ethnic countries. Well, the problem is quite similar across over all the religious, all the cultures and so on. The masculinity is the main thing. So, and then the way, like Prof. Allen's already told us just now, the upbringing way, that means the importance of being boys and girls is different. So the upbringing of boys is different as compared to upbringing of women. So the boys shouldn't be cry, and then the women can try to be soft and so on. So I think it's actually the implications in terms of in the adult phase is actually part of that. It's actually on the health implication as well, because men tend to be like ego, so they don't want to be sick. They don't want to be seen as a sick people, because they are the leader in the family, the leader in the, well, in many other institutions and so on. So they try to be ego. That's why the health screening also is actually is lower among men as compared to the women.
Do we have any figures on uptake of screening comparing between men and women?
Yes. Basically, in Ministry of Health, we are actually capturing all the data related with... We are actually having the health screening program, okay, in our health clinic. And every year, we monitor them closely. And all the while, the trending is very significant in terms of not so good in the uptake among men as compared to women. So the difference is between 1-2%, but even 1-2% is actually a big impact, especially on their health outcome.
What would you say are the most neglected men's health issues globally as well as in Malaysia?
One that hasn't been mentioned yet is their men's mental health. And there's a lot of men out there with quite marked mental and emotional difficulties, not mental ill health specifically, but whereas women were much better at picking up anxiety and depression, for a lot of men that's hidden, or it comes out in different ways. It comes out through their get angry, or they may smoke more, or they may drink more, or they may try and avoid the issue and not talk about it. And I think that can lead to all sorts of difficulties within the family and also for the man themselves. The suicide rate globally is going up for men dramatically, and we're seeing more men that are taking their lives, often without anybody knowing about it. Mm. Often they've not gone to the doctors, they've not talked to any family or friends, because men feel as though they should bottle it up and own it. This is my responsibility. And actually, we know very well that when men do share with their doctors, with their healthcare professional, with a friend, or get some kind of help, they can see a different way through their problems, and they can have a great success in managing their emotions.
Dr. Zakia, what about in Malaysia? Number one, do you think that mental health is also largely neglected? And secondly, what are the other men's health issues that are just not being focused on at all?
Because, like our prof said, that the mental health issues is actually the main issues in Malaysia. But based on our data, it's not actually something that is so serious in Malaysia pertaining to men's health. The most important thing and the serious thing in Malaysia is due to all the non-communicable diseases such as hypertension, diabetes, cardiovascular and so on. So in terms of the specific things on men's, especially in Malaysia, because you know that all the programs in Ministry of Health is based on a disease base, okay, the cardiovascular, the non-communicable disease, hypertension, diabetes, and so on. So it's very difficult actually to just to be focused on the men's health alone, because we just started to have this men's health program, and that this is actually the platform on especially on the how we can actually try to develop very systematic and very good in terms of data collections and so on.
Okay, that will be something that I would like to explore when we come back from the break. I'm speaking to Dr. Zakia Binti Mohammad Said from Ministry of Health and Professor Ellen White from Leeds Beckett University on men's health, the local and global perspective. After the break, we'll sink our teeth into specific policies and strategies targeting men's health. You're listening to BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to the show with me, T. Shao Ik. With me today, Dr. Zakia Binti Mohammad Said, public health physician from the adult health sector in the Ministry of Health's Family Health Development Division, and Professor Ellen White, Emeritus Professor of Men's Health from Leeds Beckett University. We're looking at men's health issues today, and we've discussed the specific health challenges that men face. Now, we can look at how we should adopt a public health approach to addressing the socioeconomic and cultural determinants of men's health. And Professor Ellen, you sit on the WHO Europe Committee looking at a men's health strategy. And when the WHO convened its expert meeting last year to tackle this strategy, it reported that for the first time, WHO is undertaking a strategy entirely focused on the health and well-being of men and boys. Perhaps just to give it some context, why has there historically been no focus on men's health at the public health level?
I don't think it's deliberate. I think what's happened is that the World Health Organization has been looking at the main priorities, and there's no doubt that a lot of the issues relating to global health are global, and infection control and sanitation and access to free health to healthcare and so a lot of their work has been tackling it as a whole level. Women's health has also been seen as important because maternal health, high levels of women have died unnecessarily through childbirth and through poor maternal health. And so, therefore, I don't think it's been a deliberate oversight. I think it's just, it's now time. I think when I started doing my research, there was almost nothing being talked about men's health. It was a brand new area. And within a short, relatively short, 20 years' time, we've come a long way in our understanding now of what men's health is all about. I led the European Commission study on the state of men's health across the Western European countries. And that, again, is another level of understanding that we've now had that has helped feed into it. The Asian Men's Health Report that the Men's Health Clearing Centre has produced, which is a fantastic piece of work, has again shown how men's health is developing. But the World Health Organization, they recognise that there's three areas that we need to specifically focus on. One is what they call the missing men, the huge number of men dying prematurely. Mm-hmm. The Sustainable Development Goal 3, which is around a healthy world for all. That's one of the main areas. They recognize that we need to tackle why men are dying. Second is inequalities. We know that there are massive differences between countries and between areas of countries where men's health differs. The wealthy man has a good health, the poor man has a poor health. And what can we do about the inequalities that exist? And the third area is gender equality. And the World Health Organization has been very powerful in its fight for human rights and for recognition of equality between the genders, and that men have a significant role to play. Gender is not just women. Gender is men and women. Mm-hmm. And that we have to look at relational issues about how men are socialized and how women are socialized and how we see the relation of men in work, in education, in all aspects of life. It matters how we live. And the more equitable the society, the healthier the society. And so that they're pushing those three main areas. And the main report and strategy, the first one ever for the World Health Organization, an important development, because that will be the lead, hopefully, for the other regions of the world to look at men's health, and then hopefully for the World Health Organization Global to create some kind of global strategy for men's health.
Dr. Zakia, what difference will it make? What will it mean to Malaysia to have a global strategy to guide our policies?
Yeah. So it is actually very interesting, based on Prof. Allen's mentioned just now, that WHO start to recognize and start to have the specific things about men's health mentioned in that platform. So we are really, really looking forward to this WHO's strategies and so on to suit with whatever things that we've done in Malaysia. And as you know, that Malaysia already have the men's health policy, and now we are going to have this men's plan, health plan of action. So basically, in this plan of action, it's actually focused on the 6 priority areas, and I think that is quite similar with what Prof. Allen has been saying just now. The first priority areas is optimal health outcomes for men. So it is more on the work of the promotions, the screenings, the preventions, and so on. The second thing is about the health equity between different population groups of men. So this is an important thing of we'll try to relate with all the social determinants of health that is actually influencing the men's health as a whole. And the another point is actually improving the health for men at different life stages. And when we are talking about men, it's not only men in the adult phase. So men is actually started from boys until the elderly. Mm-hmm. So we need to have that kinds of strategy in different life stages. And then another point is actually a focus on preventive health for men, particularly chronic diseases and injury, through a very good and systematic of health promotion, prevention and screening. And finally, we need to have a strong evidence base on men's health policy. This is actually a good collaboration that we have at the moment. So all the academicians is actually giving us with the evidence, and we could translate or will try to translate in a suitable policy that suit with our countries and our based on the cultural needs and so on. And finally, to improve accessibility on healthcare, so we might need to have the how to improve in terms of the availability of the facilities, in terms of empowerment of the community. Maybe we need to have so-called male-friendly clinic, but we don't sure about that. Mm. Okay, and these priority areas we need to encompass in our main plan of action in terms of the number one is health promotion, number two is accessible and appropriate healthcare services, human resource development, health information system, intersectoral collaboration, R&D and legislation. So when we see about this plan of action, I think it covers every angle and it's quite very comprehensive. And I would like to say that this is actually a collaborative effort that has been made in order to put all the ideas from all agencies, agencies actually to have these kinds of comprehensiveness of plan of patients.
Definitely, because we were looking at going beyond just providing health services. Yep. So who is the Ministry of Health engaging in these intersectoral collaboration that you mentioned?
Yeah, we engage with Ministry of Education, Ministry of Women, Family and Development, Ministry of Human Resource, Perkeso or SOCSO, Ministry of Finance, and other universities as well.
Mm-hmm. Professor Allen, you know, we already talk about education on getting people to quit smoking, for example. Mm. We talk about cancer screening, and among these are the conditions that affect men. So while we are already tackling these problems or these diseases, what difference does it make when you put a gender lens on it, as opposed to addressing it in isolation?
Well, a lot of it is about identity, men's identity, like weight. Weight is a good example. We tend to find globally that more men are overweight than women, whereas we still see weight as being very much a female issue. Mm-hmm. Nearly all the weight loss initiatives are aimed at women, all the adverts about weight are aimed at women, products are aimed at women. Very few men are being put forward to go to weight loss groups. And they wouldn't go because it's mainly a women's focus. So using weight as an example, it's a good one. What does it mean for a man to be overweight? We know that women tend to put the most of their weight on their hips and thighs, which is actually healthy, less not unhealthy, mm-hmm. Whereas men tend to put it around their middle. Mm-hmm. For women, if they put visceral fat, the fat around their middle, on, it's a very dangerous thing. But for men, most of the fat is around their middle, which increases their risk of cardiovascular disease, it increases their risk of diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol. It's a very, and the fat-related cancers. So for men, weight is a really significant health issue. And yet, we're not thinking about it. So by thinking about it, we start to think, well, how are boys socialized growing up to be a big man? Does the weight show that I'm affluent? Does the weight show that I'm able to pay for good food and that this is all my, this is, I've done this all by myself. Look how I'm...
We call it prosperous here in Malaysia. Yeah.
Prosperous. Look, yeah. I'm big enough now to die early. and that is actually the problem. We've got to start changing the way people, men, see themselves and recognise that the health of their bodies is actually fundamental to the way they can live their lives. And that by losing weight and becoming fitter, so that involves physical activity. We know men, a lot of men are not physically active. No, women aren't as well. But the focus is on women because we know women are not physically active. There's a huge number of men that are not physically active. Men go to work and sit down for long periods of time. Sedentary behavior is terribly bad for health of men and for women. So all these things are compounding. So we have to be thinking about putting a gender lens on to see the problem from the man's perspective, to see how the services are reaching out to target men. Are they effective? Could we do it more a better way? And so there's a whole raft of issues now that we're recognising in nearly every aspect of life. Nearly every aspect of life, you can see it differently if you put those gender lenses on and see it from a man's perspective or a woman's perspective.
So that would also mean that we need a lot of data. We need a lot of research that is looking at where men are in society and how they're contributing and therefore what their needs are.
Well, research is a fascinating thing, and it can really show you what needs to be done for professionals and for... But for the man on the street, he will already know if he's overweight. Mm. He doesn't need research to tell him he can't run for a bus anymore, or he can't, or if he bends over, he can't reach his toes, or he's what we call a wheezy dad, someone who has children but can't actually, and so we already
can't keep up with his kids when they're playing and all that.
Yeah. And so you don't actually need research; you need awareness. Mm-hmm. And you need people to be thinking. I said this often, stop talking about children. Start talking about boys and girls. So you're automatically thinking, oh, it's a boy, it's a girl. Is there a difference? Stop talking about adults or the population. Start thinking about men and women. Stop talking about parents. Talk about mothers and fathers, because it matters if it's a mother or a father. And how can we work with fathers to make them better at being a father? Because that's what they want to be. They want to be good fathers. So all the way through, we can just change the way we talk about men and their health, allow men to recognize that it's not stigmatizing or it's not a problem to have emotional problems, that we can talk about these things and actually make a lot of progress whilst the research is being done.
But wouldn't you agree that we do need research when it comes to understanding where, for example, where men are accessing health services, for example, where facilities may be lacking? Dr. Zakia, what kind of research is Malaysia looking into when it comes to men's health? Where are the gaps?
Since the men's health program is just like a new program in Ministry of Health in Malaysia, so we really need some kinds of research, some kinds of the really evidence-based things to translate it into policies. So, but basically we have, I think that we have quite so much research or data in terms of telling us where is the gaps in terms of non-communicable diseases, for instance. But the lacking thing is that we don't have so much information related. Is what are the best or the best thing or the best information or the best thing that is needed actually from the men, for us actually to have a good policy. Yeah, I think that is a gap. So we might need the research in terms from the men's perspective, from different levels. I think different social background and so on, so that it can be translated into very good policies.
Professor Allen?
Yes, as a professor, we do research, and what we're finding is the more we do, the more we need to do. Mm-hmm. And we've been looking at how men use services and how do the men use the services, mm-hmm. and also how do the services reach out and target the men. So we have two levels of research there. So men's, what can we do to enhance men going to the services, mm-hmm. and research on how do the services set themselves up and
so
see them.
Push and pull.
Push and pull. Then we have to understand men themselves. Mm-hmm. And so there's another level of research which is speaking to men. What's it like to have diabetes? What's it like to be overweight? What's it like? So you can start to see it from their perspective. So we can do it from the user's point of view. Health professionals are very good at setting up services, whether they're very good at doing reaching the right people at the right time. Different men. I mean, it's not just men globally. So we have to be thinking about men of different ages. So men of different ethnicities, and especially in such a multicultural country like Malaysia, you can have something set up, but will it work with that group and that group? Mm-hmm. So you then have to think about disabilities, men with disabilities. Mm-hmm. You have to think about men's sexualities. You have to think about men's socioeconomic position.
Definitely.
Poor men's experiences are going to be very different from a rich man's experience. So we can draw on the data that's gathered nationally, the routine collected data. You can make differences in the way that that is collected, certainly. But one of the most important things is the analysis. Mm. So we gather data. We know how many men have esophageal cancer and how many women. But who's actually standing back and saying, right, so what are we doing now based on that data? And it's the analysis of the data that I think is often the bit that gets missed. We have a record, but not an understanding.
And that's where the gender lens needs to come on.
Yeah.
You know, currently, as far as Malaysia is concerned, at least, the healthcare professionals who work in men's health are what I call them a ragtag sort of band, because you have urologists, you have family health physicians, public health physicians, simply by the nature of the work that brings them into contact with men. But you know, we don't have people who specialize in men's health. In the absence of that, who do we need to be engaging with? And are we looking at developing men's health as a specialty?
If you specialise, you have a specialist skill in a particular area, whereas what we've been discussing is a very broad public health agenda that goes across road traffic, cancer, mental health. It covers such a plethora, wide range of issues where men work, health and safety in the workplace, and it covers education, it covers finance, it covers... So what you need is a general growing of awareness across all the sectors. You need specialists to be directed to. And you have phenomenally competent, expert urologists, andrologists that can sort out men's erectile dysfunction, sort out men's prostate, lower urinary tract symptoms, and fertility issues in men. So you have to have specialists that are brilliant in those areas. But to have one specialist group that can do everything perhaps is not possible. It's like saying we'll have the woman's health specialist. What would that specialist be in? So it's looking to create perhaps a field of academic study. Mm-hmm. And that's what the research centres around the world have been trying to do, and the brilliant work that's going on at the University of Malaya. They've got some phenomenally important work going on that's been now internationally recognised. And that, to me, is... And we've got the World Congress on Men's Health coming here in 2 years' time. 2020, we've got the world... All the specialists from around the world are coming to Malaysia to discuss men's health. And I think that's an indication of how far things have come.
Mm, very significant. And in fact, the first Malaysian Men's Health Conference has just taken place as well. And what was significant about this conference, and what can we look forward to next?
It happened. You've had it. You've had the first Malaysian Men's Health Conference. Mm. That's a great statement, isn't it? That's like saying, this now exists. This is official. We have brought together experts from around the country, from all different sectors, to say, look, this is now an important issue. We have to be talking about it. You have to be talking about it. You have to be talking about it. You have to be talking about it. It was launched by the Minister of Health. It was
the minister is himself.
And you can say more about who else was there, but it was a tremendous opportunity for us to make a statement about men's health in Malaya. I'm a visiting professor at the University of Malaya and proud to be so.
What areas of research would you like to highlight about the University of Malaya looking into men's health?
Well, there's the Men's Health Clearing Centre, which is a website where nearly all the most up-to-date information about men's health is gathered. That's a very important resource. There's ScreenMan, which is a screening application that has just been developed for young men to be able to identify how... That's not yet up and running, but it's something that's been developed and been recognised in significant papers around the world. There's the Men's Health Index, which is an opportunity for us to identify what are the key issues that practitioners should be looking at. They'll shoot me because I can't remember all the others. But what I'm saying is that they are, and there's the policy.
So, yeah. It's actually a wonderful things that we managed to produce after 2014 discussions, roundtable discussions, like Alan has already mentioned just now. Men Health Clearing House is actually one of the website or the web page that actually all the information related with men's health pertaining to Malaysian and also international can be just can be go through that website. Another thing is that the policy itself, the draft of plans of actions, okay, and then this men's health program is actually not only started to be something that is very unique in to Ministry of Health, but the policy has been actually penetrated to all the other ministries as well. So other ministries as well started to talk about the role of, like Prof said just now, the role of wife, the role of husband or the role of father in their own policies, in their own plans of action. I think this is some of the good things that indirectly the advocacy things have actually been so far success, I think. And apart from that, we have a very regular technical meetings. Okay, the technical meetings consist of all the collaborators, so that we know and up to date on what's next. So what are we going to do next? What are we going to do next year? What are the main focus for the next year and so on? The training and so on. So a lot of wonderful things, a lot of great jobs, a lot of great works that have been done in the past, for the past three years.
Which is a remarkable speed, actually. Yes. And considering, as I understand it, only four countries in the world have a national men's health policy. Is that right?
There's three that have definitely, the Ireland, Australia, and Brazil. Mm-hmm. They've got, and Iran is meant to be developing or has developed a men's health policy as well, which is excellent news, because that means that the country are focusing specifically on the health issues of men and trying to identify directly what they can do and then have targets, strategy and targets that can be achieved.
I would like to ask you, Professor Allen, we have a policy. Mm. What will it take to see that policy translate into better health outcomes for men?
These things take a long time. And I think that we're making haste. Make haste slowly. There's some things you can change quite quickly. And you can perhaps make some screening programs more accessible. You perhaps can move the screening programs. People say men are hard to reach. Actually, men are very hard to avoid. You just go to where the men are. And so sometimes you can rethink the way a service has been set up so that it can go into the workplace, or it can go into sporting settings or places where there's thousands of men. And just by getting a few key sportsmen or key people to sign up to something, then suddenly you've got a great success. Barcelona, the football team, did a smoking cessation program online on the web. Barca quit against smoking. Nearly 33% of the people who signed up quit smoking.
Right.
So, I mean,
fantastic.
Would they have stopped smoking if Barcelona hadn't been the key people? You've got amazing hockey teams and amazing sporting venues that perhaps you could tap into some of those sporting...
Using advocates.
Yeah. So there's some things that perhaps by thinking through and just being a bit creative and a little bit imaginative, you can do things quite quickly. Mm. Other things take more time. But by talking about it, by starting the conversation, by starting to get key people from different... We had a meeting with Director General Chong, Dr. Chong.
Dr. Chong, yeah.
The Deputy Director General.
Deputy Director General. I mean, that was fantastic to have. He was also at the launch of the conference. And having that kind of support and that kind of weight of public opinion now, oh, right, this is important.
Yep.
And I think that's a great way forward.
I definitely like the idea that you said about we should be reaching out to where men are. And, you know, it's at the end of the day, it comes down to empowerment, agency, I suppose. If we want to change men's health, we need men to change their behaviors. Perhaps a final message from both of you. What would you like to tell them about making a change to their own health?
Your health matters. It makes a difference. It's a basic human right to be healthy. And you shouldn't be pressured by feeling that you have to behave in a certain way when you know actually that it's affecting your health. And therefore, if it's affecting your health, it'll affect your family's health. If it affects your family's health and well-being, then that's your children's upbringing that could be affected. And if God forbid, that you die prematurely, then that's a huge loss to everybody, but mostly to yourself. Mostly to yourself, and that if you respect your body and think about your body and your mind and body and how best you can support yourself to being a healthier individual, you'll live a long and happy life and enjoy your retirement and be loved forever.
Dr. Zakia?
So I wish that all men that are out there will start to take care of their life. Start to take care of their health, actually. So just try to practice healthy lifestyle, okay? Start to do a very regular health checkups, health screenings, and so on. It's actually the best step. So just, I think that is the most important thing that that the message should be reached to the men in our country.
Thank you very much, Dr. Zakia and Professor Allen. I've been speaking to Dr. Zakia binti Mohammad Said from Ministry of Health and Professor Allen White from Leeds Beckett University on adopting a public health approach to men's health issues. You've been listening to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.